Welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, brought to you by TournamentPokerEdge.com, the only podcast dedicated exclusively to poker tournament strategy. Now here's your host, Clayton Fletcher.
Hello once again, everybody, and welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, sponsored by America's Card Room, ACR, where this Sunday, the free roll returns. We missed you guys last week. Derek, Killingbird, Tenbush, and I both had conflicts, and so we were unable to do the Sunday free roll, but it returns this week. It's a $1,000 guaranteed tournament with only 300 players and $201 for first place. I don't know why, but that's what first place is, 201. The TPE free roll happens this Sunday, April 9th, at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. So get on the Discord, click the link in the description of this podcast, join the TPE Discord, and find out how you can get your share of $1,000 absolutely free. My name is Clayton Fletcher, and I am in Tucson, Arizona, USA. And tonight and tomorrow, April 7th and 8th, I am appearing at Laughs in Tucson. It's a comedy club where I will be performing for the very first time. So yeah, if you're in Tucson, Arizona, or within driving distance, come on down to Laughs Comedy Cafe. Get your tickets now at laughstucson.com. Well, it's been a wild couple of days. Guys, I had Ebony Kenny on my screen. We were going to do an episode together this week. I was looking at her. We were talking face to face over Zoom. And then the next thing I know, she disappeared. And I said, you know, I've been ghosted before. This happens. It turns out, guys, Ebony's power went out just as we were about to hit record. We had just done the prep. We were ready to start recording. And I know you guys are very, very eager to have her on the podcast. And I am, of course, equally eager. Ebony's one of my favorite people in poker, and I was so excited to interview her, but her whole setup crashed. We were still able to text each other back and forth, but we couldn't get everything working the way that it needs to for podcasting purposes. And by the time her power came up again, I was already on stage. So we're going to have to reschedule Ebony Kenny for another date. And so I have to wing it for you guys today. I just have one hand that I want to go through from last year's World Series of Poker main event. But first, since Ebony was so willing, gracious, and agreeing to come on to the podcast, I want to tell you guys about something she's doing. It's a coaching series for women in poker called Embodied Confidence. And this is the main thing that I wanted to discuss with her. It's a free series that she's doing over Zoom, designed to empower and uplift women by offering guidance and support in building confidence both on and off the felt. So, you know, Ebony likes to lift other people up. This is just her personality. Almost every time I've ever seen her in my life, she had a big, beautiful smile on her face. She is that proverbial ray of sunshine that the poker world desperately needs. I mean, what the poker world has too much of is this unsportsmanlike, trash-talking bravado that we're seeing with some of the recent heads-up-for-rolls challenges. So if you want to get away from that and learn more about embodied confidence, visit ebonykenny.com. All right, let's talk about this heads-up-for-rolls. I think this is actually bad for the game. You know, these two guys, Matt Berkey and this guy whose name I can't pronounce because everybody just calls him Nick Airball. It's really become a circus. You know, we're going to play heads up. You know, first of all, guys, heads up is a wild game with a lot of luck involved. Now, I'm not saying that skill won't win out over time, but I'm just saying that the long run is a long time. And unless you're going to be playing 100,000 hands online, like we saw in the Phil Galfond Challenge and others. I think these guys are agreeing to do 100 hours, which really is nothing. I mean, Whichever of these two gentlemen, and I use the term gentleman very loosely, wins this heads-up challenge, it will likely be just whichever one gets better cards. I mean, obviously, whichever of these guys is the favorite is still the favorite and will likely win bigger pots in the hands where he's ahead and lose smaller pots in the hands where he's behind, because that's the nature of being better at this game than someone else. But I just don't think that 100 hours could really tell us which one of these guys is better at Heads Up No Limit, unless one of them is substantially better, which I don't believe is the case. Now, here's why I think this whole thing is, at the end of the day, a net loss for poker. This is bad for the game. And it's this. You guys look ridiculous. You know, you're walking up to each other, dressed incredibly poorly, in your sweatpants, in your casino, and everyone's seen the video where one guy is kind of towering over the other guy like we're about to do a weigh-in for an MMA fight. The whole stare down and uber macho intimidation tactics and, you know, this trash talk and people tweeting rude things about each other's mothers. It's juvenile. You know, this is not what poker needs. We are trying to be recognized as a legitimate mind sport along the lines of chess. And you would never see two chess masters behaving this way. You just wouldn't, because they respect their opponents, even the ones they don't like. Now, if you two guys really hate each other and what you really want to do is have a fist fight, then let's get an MMA ring. I'm sure that players would come and cheer on whichever one of these idiots they think is more manly than the other. But at the end of the day, you guys are nerds, okay? We all are. This is poker. We're math geeks, okay? Let's just own it. None of us can kick anybody else's butt. On one picture, I got two guys staring each other down as though they're about to bash each other's skulls in. And the next slide, it's one of them trying to figure out the correct four betting range on the turn. Just stop it, okay? We're dorks. We're math geeks. Embrace it. Own it. Now, I know some of you are going to remind me that Matt Berkey used to play baseball. Okay, but he doesn't now. He's not getting drafted by the Dodgers. He's doing algebra. He solves for Y. So it's a bad look for him as a business owner, as someone who's supposed to be in the business of promoting the game of poker in a healthy way. I know this stuff gets clicks and views. And look, I'm even talking about it now. Fair enough. Okay, that's a fair point. But overall, this is bad for the game. In the other corner, we just have this Nick Airball guy. He's a trash-talking punk who may or may not be good at poker, but he's on TV a lot in these Hollywood-based live-streamed cash games that seem to have the scandal of the week every week. Look, I know that it's not up to Matt Berkey and Nick Airball to carry the burden of promoting poker for the greater good on their collective shoulders, but they are in a position to do that. Certainly Matt Berkey is, as a business owner. He should carry himself as a gentleman and not try to prove who's the more manly, masculine, manly man by playing 100 hours of a game of luck that absolutely none of us can beat a computer at. It's just a bad look. And then it becomes even more of a circus. You know Doug Polk, he can't help himself anything for clicks. And then he says, well, if you guys won't do it at my place on my stream, then I'm going to give free lessons to the other guy. I'm sick of it, okay? I want something positive in poker. And that's why I was really hoping to put the spotlight on Ebony Kenny this week. But the Texas Gas and Electric Company had other ideas. So I end up weighing in on this weigh-in. And, you know, to me, the whole thing just becomes a freak show of toxic masculinity. And regardless of which one of these guys prevails, we all lose. Enough about that. I want to get to the hand from day three of last year's World Series of Poker main event as played in fabulous Las Vegas, and also let you guys know about the Venom PKO coming up on America's Card Room. It's a $2,650 buy-in. I know that is outside of many of your price ranges, but they have satellites running round the clock. You can get into this tournament for as little as $1 through a steps system. The tournament has a $5 million guaranteed prize pool with bounty prizes beginning at $625 and progressing up from there. I love PKOs. I even played in my first ever live PKO. Shout out to Maryland Live for running that really cool tournament, in which I did not do particularly well. I'm super excited for the Venom PKO, $5 million guaranteed. I plan to play, I think, April 27th. So if you sign up for April 27th, you know there will be at least one fish in the field that day. Now, if you don't have an ACR account yet, you can join by clicking the link in the description and get a 100% first-time deposit bonus all the way up to $2,000 just by using the promo code TPE. Okay, so let's go over this hand as played on day three of the 2022 World Series of Poker main event. We're not in the money yet, guys. We are actually, this is the last hand right before the dinner break, and we're going to play the hand from the perspective of Ryan Feldman. Now, Ryan is actually the creator or the co-producer, co-creator of Live at the Bike, which is one of the aforementioned California-based live stream cash games. And despite the controversy that always seems to come to his current project, which is the wildly successful Hustler Casino Live, Ryan has a very good reputation in poker. He's very well liked among tournament and cash game players. I hear very few discouraging words uttered about Mr. Feldman. So we're going to play the hand from his position. Now, he is not a professional poker player, but rather a poker adjacent showrunner, something like that. He's wearing his Hustler Casino Live t-shirt in this footage as seen on Poker Go, and he finds himself to the left of Lonnie Huey, who you may know as Lonnie Harwood, one of the most decorated players from the greater New York City area. I have had the pleasure of playing with Lonnie, and she comports herself very well at the table. She's a lot of fun to talk to, actually, but I can assure you, if she's at your table, you are the fish. Anyway, Lonnie opens this pot to 8,000 from second position, and she's got 800,000 in the stack. So she is doing great. This is at a time when the average stack in this tournament is probably right around 400,000. So she is right around double that. We're about 300 or 400 players off the money. We expect to probably get into the money right around the end of the day. And again, this is at the end of level 13, or level 3, if you will, of day 3. And so Lonnie raises to 8,000. We're not going to talk about what she had. And you are playing the role of Ryan Feldman in third position. You have 233,000 in your stack. And your holding is the King of Spades, Queen of Hearts. So what to do with King Queen facing a second position open from the great Lonnie Huey? My opinion is we should just be folding. There are so many players yet to act behind us. We are going to have the worst relative position, meaning that if we see a multi-way flop here, which is fairly likely given the circumstances, there's a very high likelihood of us being in a sandwich, by which I mean the most likely better on the flop would probably be Mrs. Huey. And so then we would have to act before we know what the next player to act has to do, aka the sandwich spot. Now, King Queen is a medium strength hand. You're in early position. You have an expert player who's already opened and has you covered. I think this is a fold. It's a fold that you learn if you play many, many hours of tournament poker over the course of many, many years, or if you study pre-flop charts with some type of computer simulator or solver. But if you spend most of your time producing poker content and maybe not as much time playing tournament poker, I would venture a guess that Ryan Feldman probably plays fewer than 15 tournaments a year. He probably plays the main event and maybe a few of the things around California, but mostly he's got his hands full dealing with the cast of characters of Hustler Casino Live. And so I think it's pretty forgivable that he makes a mistake, what I consider a mistake in this hand, and decides to enter the pot in the first place with the King Queen. Now, obviously, King Queen is not a hopeless hand, and Lonnie probably has a fairly wide opening range, because there are several non-professionals at the table and no one that I would assume strikes the least bit of fear in Lonnie's stone cold heart. So I don't expect her to be playing a tight, cautious style. I don't think she got this 800,000 stack by waiting for the nuts. I think she might have a fairly wide opening range. And therefore, I think if Mr. Feldman wants to continue, his best play is actually to 3-bet here. Again, I think folding is best, but I think calling is worst. So if he wants to come in here, I'd like to see him make it 25, 30,000 and hopefully end the pot before the flop, or at least get heads up in position versus Lonnie's hopefully somewhat wide range. It all seems very speculative. There are too many players yet to act for this to be the best play. But personally, I do prefer raising to calling with this hand in this spot. However, Feldman calls, so he puts in 8,000 off of his 233,000 stack, and it folds over to the button, who is a very colorful character by the name of Jimmy D'Ambrosio, Jimmy D, as he's known, an extremely gregarious, fun-loving player who calls on the button with a similar stack to Hero, 220K. Next is the small blind, a player named Yuen, who also calls 6,000 more from the small blind with 190 behind. And finally, the big blind is Austin Apicella, who calls for 4,000 more, getting 4 million to 1 after all this action to Lonnie's min raise. So Lonnie made it 8K at 244 and got four callers, including the blinds. And now with 56,000 in the middle, five players see a flop of queen of spades, five of spades, four of clubs. So queen, five, four with two spades. Hero, Ryan Feldman, holding the king of spades, queen of hearts for top pair, king kicker, and back door spade flush draw. So the action goes a check from the small blind, a check from the big blind, a check from the original raiser, Lonnie Huey, and now into the pot of 56,000. Ryan, with top pair king kicker, decides to bet 16,000. So just over one quarter of the pot. So it's a very small bet, especially given his number of opponents. But I think this bet is very defensible, because number one, he's got a hand that is probably good, but he can't be sure. And if he gets raised here, he might be able to get away from it. That's one consideration. But the real consideration is there aren't that many cards on the turn that will hurt Ryan if he is ahead right now. So because we have that king of spades, even if an ace comes on the turn, if it happens to be the ace of spades, it will give us the nut flush draw, which we would be very happy to have along with our pair of queens. A king on the turn would give us two pair. There aren't that many draws available other than the aforementioned flush draw, but remember, we have the king of spades, so we're not overly concerned about the possible flush coming in. So Ryan's decision to bet only 16K here is a defensible one. And now on the button, Jimmy D decides to make the call. Again, I haven't told you what any of our opponents have. We are playing this hand from the perspective of Ryan Feldman with the king queen. So Jimmy D calls on the button, and Mr. Austin Apicella also calls from the big blind. So three players to the turn. So Huey and UN folded, leaving just these three guys. And so we're going to be second of three to act on the turn. Now with 104,000 in the middle, the turn comes the deuce of diamonds for a board of queen of spades, five of spades, four of clubs, deuce of diamonds. So queen, five, four, deuce with two spades, hero holding the king of spades, queen of hearts. Again, Apicella checks, and it's up to Ryan Feldman. Well, should we bet our pair of queens again? It does appear that we're going to be ahead a lot. I can imagine a lot of scenarios where king, queen is still good. I mean, Jimmy D is a pretty loose player. He could have a lot of hands. He could have a hand like queen 10. He could even have a pocket pair below queens. Of course, either of our opponents could have a flush draw, and that deuce of diamonds looks pretty safe, although it does complete the six tray as well as the wheel for anyone who has ace tray. Otherwise, this king queen should be on top a lot. Of course, sets are possible. Like, right, you can't worry about everything, but yeah, definitely somebody could have a set. Should we bet or not? I think this is a really close, really tough decision. Knowing that Austin Apicella is a fairly tight player and that he overcalled on the flop, I might be a little bit concerned that he could be slow playing a monster, maybe a hand like pocket fives, right? But does that give us enough of a reason to not protect our hand and try to get some more value from king queen? Well, let's look at the protecting our hand part first. Yeah, I mean, as Ryan, we now have approximately two times the pot in our remaining stack. So we could fire really big here and just try to make them pay if they're drawing to the flush or whatever, possibly even get some value from a non-believing queen jack or queen 10 type of hand. That seems a little ambitious to me, and I'm not really sure we want to bust out of the main event holding king queen on a queen high board when we started the pot with an M of 24. We had like 60 big blinds, right? So that seems a bit aggressive for me. I think on balance, and you guys may be surprised by this, I would usually go ahead and give the free card here. I know sometimes we end up losing to a flush on the river like we saw with Lila West in last week's hand versus Jamie Kerstetter. So yeah, of course that is the risk you take. But I feel like in tournaments, preserving your stack is more important than protecting any one particular one pair hand. I'm not going to be happy if a spade hits on the river because I could have protected my hand. But the amount of capital investment involved in protecting my hand from a potential flush is a little too great. Remember, in tournament poker, the chips that you lose are worth more than the chips that you win. So protecting your hand is less important in this spot. Now, if you wanted to, like, you know, shove for twice the pot in a cash game just to try to take it down and win the pot and make sure nobody outdraws you, I mean, I guess that's okay. It's not probably the highest EV play, but I think it's a bigger mistake to play that way in a tournament because, number one, there's no guarantee that this pair of queens is good anyway. Again, it was a bet and a call and an overcall on the flop, which should slow you down a little bit, depending, of course, on the playing style of the overcaller. But yeah, I think just sitting there, having gotten called twice, now this deuce isn't the safest card in the world because, again, it completes the wheel as well as six tray, which I don't know if six tray is in Jimmy D's range, but I suppose it could be in the range of our big blind, who again was getting ridiculous pot odds to call before the flop, closing the action, I might add. So I wouldn't be able to rule out any hand for Austin Apicella. So I don't know. This is a close one. I think I would usually check. Ryan Feldman decides to put in a bet of $40,000 into the 104K pot. Now, remember, Ryan's only got about $200 in his stack, and same for D'Ambrosio. Apicella has them both well covered. He starts the hand with almost $700K. So this is a tough one. I mean, he bets, and then D'Ambrosio calls, and now Austin Apicella raises to $80,000. The min raise into two opponents on 4th Street. Now, let's try to figure out what his range could possibly be for making that raise. I mean, honestly, guys, if you pull this trick on me, you might actually get me to fold top pair. This feels so unbelievably nutty. It feels like I've got it. I know I've got it, and I don't want to lose you guys. At the same time, I want to make sure I can get the rest of your stacks on the river. So please just put in another 40 more. And I think that Apicella would do this with a hand like Ace Trey or Six Trey, as we mentioned. Maybe also a set or some other big hand. I don't know that he would ever make this play as a bluff. So when you're playing, especially this tournament, the main event, most players don't do crazy things and get out of line on the last hand before dinner break on the day you reach the money, day three. To me, this screams nutty. If I'm Ryan Feldman, I've already put in about 40% of my stack at this point. Do I want to call another $40,000 when I could have a pot equity of zero? Well, it depends on whether you think Austin Apicella is capable of min-raise bluffing into two opponents on 4th Street. Again, most players are not capable of that. It is a very sophisticated play. It looks so nutty, it just might work, that sort of thing. I don't think too many guys show up for day three of the main event with this particular trick in their bag. I think this is going to be heavily weighted towards the nuts, even if it's not 100% the nuts. Combine that with the fact that Jimmy D could be slow playing behind us, and I think we have a very difficult but compulsory lay down. You know, Ryan, go to dinner, regroup, you come back, you have plenty of chips, you're still in the tournament, you may obsess about the hand. Did I throw away the winner with my king queen? Okay, maybe you did, maybe you didn't, but I think it's really important to be able to make those big lay downs in the main event. And again, Ryan Feldman, not a professional player. And this might be one of those spots where the edge, for those of us who do study this game very hard, where that edge comes from and why you see certain players running deep in the main event and other similar tournaments all the time. And some people just kind of get there once. This is the difference between professional poker and non-professional poker. Now, am I trying to say that if I'm sitting there in Ryan Feldman's shoes, I'm just going to be able to throw that king queen away like it's nothing? No, guys, absolutely not. But I like to think that I would be able to concentrate enough to figure out what was going on and get out of there. Just the chance that king queen is good versus both of my opponents. When on the turn it goes bet, call, min raise, I just think that that is a very close to a 0% chance. And even if my hand is good, I still have to dodge the flush anyway. Just get me out of here. I'll go to dinner and live to fight another day. Ryan's still in and he calls 40K more, as does Jimmy D. And now we've got a big pot. At this point, the pot is $344,000. Ryan Feldman with only 125K remaining in his stack, and Jimmy D with only 113. And the river comes the four of diamonds for a final board of queen of spades, five of spades, four of clubs, deuce of diamonds, four of diamonds. Queen 5-4, deuce 4, no flush, and Apicella bets 100,000 into the pot of 344,000. Knowing and being able to see very clearly that Ryan Feldman has only 125 and Jimmy D'Ambrosio has only 113 behind, Austin puts in 100K. Now, what does that feel like to you, dear listener? If Austin is capable of doing this with a busted flush draw, then good for him. I know I'm getting more than 4-1 on a call in hero shoes, but at this point, I've been strung along so far, and now Austin won't even put me all in. It feels to me like, please call. Please give me another 100. I know I've got this one locked up. I just, you know, and with the board pairing, I'm not too concerned about the board pairing, because if I was behind on the turn, I'm behind on the river. But the problem for Ryan is that if he was ahead on the turn, he's almost certainly ahead again on the river. Remember, Austin min raised the turn. He probably doesn't have a four in his hand unless he had two pair, or he now has quads. So it's unlikely that that four really changed who was in the lead. This is a really sickening spot. I hate folding, getting 4.3-1, but I know that it's really, really unlikely King Queen could possibly be any good. To Ryan Feldman's credit, he took a very long time. Everybody's going to dinner. You know, they're all leaving for dinner all around him. He probably had reservations somewhere, and he's like, I've got to make this decision first. And he sat there and he sat there, and he eventually made the call. Jimmy D, I can now tell you, had the 10 of spades, 9 of spades. So he was just coming along with the flush draw the whole time and missed. So once Feldman makes the call, Jimmy D leaves for dinner, and Ryan sees the bad news that Austin Apicella held the 6 of diamonds, tray of clubs, and made the nut straight on the turn. So really bad news for Ryan. He does not leave right away. Poker Go gets a lot of credit for this. They captured this moment when he calls off. He started that hand with 240,000. He finished that hand with 25,000 in chips. Just a very dusty stack. And, you know, you start to think, maybe I should have left for dinner a little bit early. And we as poker players have all been there, where you make a bad call or you play a hand regrettably. In my case, it's usually trying to pull off some huge bluff right before the dinner break on day 3. Like, make a mental note, Clayton, don't do that this year. Yeah, so these are the real-life emotions of No Limit Hold'em tournaments. He was doing fine, not great, below average, but, you know, still having plenty of a playable stack, I guess you could say. Very much so, a playable stack. He starts the hand with just under 60 bigs, and he ends the hand with what's going to be like 4 or 5 big blinds coming back from dinner. So I feel for you, Ryan Feldman. I have been there myself. Anyone who plays any amount of No Limit Hold'em tournament poker knows that feeling. And going to dinner, the food doesn't taste good. You kind of lost your appetite. Ryan Feldman actually sits there for a long time. And the announcers, Ali Najad and Nick Schulman, my colleagues at PokerGo, two of the best in the business, they do a great job on this episode of painting the portrait of a man who is now not wanting to move. He's just kind of sits there stunned for a while. And they kind of joke around that the security guards are going to make them leave, because you do have to eventually leave the tournament area for dinner break. They don't want any players around all those chips. But yeah, just Ryan sitting there kind of stunned. What have I done? And yeah, I really feel for him in that moment. This was a tough hand. I hate to sound results oriented, but I do think that the biggest mistake is made pre-flop. You know, if Lonnie Huey opens from second position and I'm in third position with King Queen in the main event with 60 big blinds, I'm throwing that hand away and going to my dinner break. Well, that'll do it for this episode. I'm really sorry I could not bring you Ebony Kenny this week. We are going to try again in the next week or two. Please follow me on Twitter at Clayton Comic. And for everyone here at Tournament Poker Edge, and with special thanks, as always, to our incredibly generous sponsor, America's Card Room, I'm Clayton Fletcher. Thank you so much for listening. I wanna
hold 'em like they do in Texas plays. Fold 'em, let 'em hit me, raise it, baby, stay with me. Luck and intuition, play the cards with babes to start. And after she's been hooked, I'll play the one that's on her heart. Baby, when it's love, it's not rough, it isn't fun. Oh, whoa.